You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin Wakes Up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us on this Wednesday. It is 6 minutes after eight right now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. It is time for headlines. Let's look at the war, which is in its eighth week. First headline, at least 21 people have been executed in Iran and 4,000 arrested since the start of its war with the U.S. and Israel, according to the United Nations Human Rights Office. The executions were carried out amid Iran's crackdown on dissent, in particular through national security-related charges, the U.N. human rights chief said this morning.
In other headlines, U.S. President Donald Trump has posted a mocked-up image of himself holding a gun and wearing aviator sunglasses on Truth Social. Alongside that is a warning for Iran, no more Mr. Nice Guy, says the text on the image. It's alongside an image of the American flag as well.
Very nice. He's so classy. The United Arab Emirates will withdraw from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, you may know it as OPEC, on May 1st. The UAE's state news agency, WAM, reported. The decision aligns with the United Arab Emirates' long-term strategic and economic vision and the development of its energy sector, including accelerating investment in domestic energy production, according to the statement from the UAE.
And finally, despite that declared ceasefire, Israeli strikes killed at least eight people throughout southern Lebanon yesterday, at least according to state media and national authorities.
All right. Well, this is a quagmire that we are stuck in for the near future because I don't think Iran wants to negotiate via Truth Social.
No. And if
we're not sending anybody to sit down with them, so.
Yep. I was just going to say, and if you don't have anybody at the table during those negotiations, it's hard to actually negotiate. So here we are.
Here we are. When is November again?
Few months yet.
I just keep holding out hope.
Hold out hope.
You know, spring's eternal. Oh, well, that's stuff we needed to know from Iran, but what about S we need to know right here?
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
All right, well, in the ballroom that will not die news, Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche has formally asked a federal judge to overturn the judge's own ruling that blocked construction of the White House ballroom. In a 9-page filing late Monday, Blanche argued that the shooting at the White House Correspondents Association dinner is proof that the ballroom is necessary for the president's safety and construction must be allowed to proceed. Okay. Federal judge, just do the news, Brian. Okay. Federal Judge Richard Leon imposed, I'll have a conversation. Excuse me while I talk to myself for a moment. Federal Judge Richard Leon imposed a preliminary injunction earlier this month, you know this, that paused above ground construction until the administration obtains congressional approval. Well, construction of a presidential bunker beneath the East Wing was not subject to the injunction because they want to bury him down there too. A federal appellate court now reviewing the case then allowed all construction to continue temporarily and will hear further arguments in early June. The lawsuit against construction was initially filed late last year by the Trust for Historic Preservation. It said Monday that it had no intention of dropping its lawsuit, which, quote, endangers no one and which respectfully asked the administration to follow the law. That is a crazy request. Can't do it, Jamie. I can't just read it. Blanche's filing asked Judge Leon for an indicative ruling, essentially a request for Leon to consider the impact of the dinner shooting and state whether he would lift the injunction or throw out the case if it were sent back to him. I can't do this anymore. Republican Rand Paul, chairman of the Senate Homeland Security Committee, said Monday he would introduce legislation to permit ballroom construction. How have we kept our president safe for 250 years without a ballroom?
I have no idea. That's a great question.
How are leaders all over the world kept safe without ballrooms? How is Vladimir Zelensky kept safe in a war without a ballroom?
Right? They've had a lot of underground tunnels for Zelensky.
Okay.
So
fair.
There is that.
How many people do those seat?
Oh, I don't know. I'm assuming probably you probably don't want that many people down there. I'm assuming if you have your tunnels full, it's probably not a good day in Ukraine. And I'm not trying to be facetious.
And not
I'm
a
just
lot of
saying,
dancing.
I'm just saying that if the tunnels are full, it's probably a bad day in that ongoing war. Another war perpetuated by a country, mind you. But this is obviously this is not about security. At this point, I don't care what this administration wants to tell you.
100% ego. It is. Look at, there was a very interesting picture posted online of when King Charles, then Prince Charles, was sitting in the Oval Office with none other than Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Right.
And then a picture of him sitting there yesterday with Donald J. Trump. The amount of outlandish decoration that has been put in the Oval Office and all over the White House. And the fact that he does, as you mentioned earlier in the show, Jamie, he idolizes kings and dictators, and he wants this for himself. He wants his own Palace of Versailles in America. We don't need it. We don't want it. And he's trying to break the law by getting it, but it will not go away.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, if you're looking at, if you're taking out the security issue and you're looking at simply the ego part of it, you're also looking at bypassing all of our constitutional checks and norms. And I don't care who you are. If you are somebody who is a more conservative voter, that should be very important to you, because in this case, even though this ballroom is being described as privately funded and it's coming from you're right. It's absolutely not, because taxpayers are going to have to be part of the conversation, because there is still security infrastructure. There's still federal land. There's still going to be long-term maintenance on this. So to even get the thing up and going, it's going to take millions and millions of dollars, which they have not completely accounted for. No matter what they tell you, it has not all been completely raised. So it is going to have to come from taxpayer money. So essentially, we're buying the ballroom, and not to mention the fact that the White House is already owned by the American people. That's why there's checks and balances. Right.
It is not
his house. Mar-a-Lago.
Plus, some more is going to come out about this, but there was a report in the New York Times yesterday that the contractor who is building, supposed to be building this ballroom, got a no-bid government contract on another project that is completely against the law.
Inner Circle?
The Constitution specifically states, the law states, that there must be open bidding on all government contracts to find the best deal. They got a no-bid contract on something else, and then they got this thing too. So there's a lot more coming out about this, but it is ego-driven, and it is ridiculous. But there's more stuff we need to know.
There is more stuff you need to know. And we're going to bring it right back here to the state of Wisconsin, because this is a fascinating story.
You love gerrymandering.
I do love gerrymandering. I do. A second three-panel judge yesterday dismissed a challenge to Wisconsin's congressional maps, ruling it has no authority to act on the claims without further input from the state Supreme Court. Now, in this particular ruling, it was stated, until the state Supreme Court says otherwise, non-justiciable and non-conizable, I knew that was going to be a hard one for me, under
That's
Wisconsin law, according to the judge. Now, the law firm that brought this suit said it would immediately appeal the ruling to the state Supreme Court. That lawsuit was brought by Law Forward. The decision is one of two cases that have been under consideration by separate panels composed of three judges from different counties appointed by the liberal-led state Supreme Court. The lawsuits, which were filed in July of last year, followed multiple failed attempts to redraw the maps, which are currently represented by six Republicans and two Democrats. Now, Law Forward is representing a group called Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy, and the case essentially contends that the current maps amount to an anti-competitive gerrymander. Republican members, of course, of the state's congressional delegation and others want to dismiss this lawsuit. The state's high court issued orders November 25th, concluding that the two legal challenges constituted a, quote, an action to challenge the apportionment of any congressional or state legislative district under a 2011 state law that requires these challenges to be heard by a panel appointed by the Supreme Court. This was actually the first time that the 2011 law had been invoked in any sort of redistricting case, though. So we're just making history all over the place with this gerrymandering argument. Here's the thing. You have a solution here, right? the governor has laid out a solution.
Mm-hmm.
There was a special session that was called 2 weeks ago now.
Yes.
That the Republicans refused to participate in. Governor Evers would like to have permanent maps put into place. So you have an option here. You have the option to negotiate with the Democrats to make sure that maps are fair to represent all of the constituents. Now, if there's a reason you don't want to do that, that might say more about where you think your politics are and who supports you than anything. But there's an offer.
Spell those out. Don't just use the "it's unfair."
Right.
That's a second grader's defense.
Right.
Tell us what your reasoning is for not wanting these maps permanent. Yeah, and you can say, well, what about population shifts and da-da-da? Well, the population shifts are mostly going to come from your major city, Madison, right. Milwaukee, Eau Claire, bigger towns. The population shifts in rural areas probably are not going to increase.
Right.
They may decrease a little. But what's the real reason? And the real reason is, we all know, holding on to power.
Now, to be
guaranteeing victory in certain districts.
Yes, absolutely. And to be completely fair, because I know we have one other story, this panel of three judges did not say that the maps are fair. They also didn't say they're unfair. They simply said we aren't going to decide this yet, which puts everything back in the hands of the state Supreme Court, which, by the way, will be a 5-2 majority once Chris Taylor is sworn in.
So what do you say?
Just laying out the facts here this morning.
All right. Well, here's another fact in more as you need to know. Jimmy Kimmel is in trouble again. He's in the crosshairs of the president. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. But now the FCC, which is led by a Republican ally of Donald Trump, is trying to go after the licenses of the parent company, which is Disney, which you know has a new CEO. So Disney's ABC is hereby directed to file license renewals for all of their licensed TV stations within 30 days. In other words, by May 28th, 2026, the FCC said in an order published yesterday afternoon. The order is not going to affect local stations right away. It's just the start of a protracted legal process. But nevertheless, the FCC order is an extraordinary escalation. We know the Trump administration is very thin-skinned and cannot take a joke. We know that they sued CBS and CBS acquiesced. They sued them over the editing of not a Trump interview, which was edited heavily the other day, but of an old Kamala Harris interview. They gave in. That led to, if you want to connect the dots, that led to Colbert being gone. Donald Trump has gone after Jimmy Kimmel before. He was suspended last year for a little bit and came back. So far, Disney is standing firm and saying, no, we are not canceling Jimmy Kimmel's show. That was a joke. It was a joke in the context of a fake roast. You don't have to like the joke, but it is definitely not. But the weaponization of the FCC is just another attempt, and we're going to talk again about the weaponization of the justice system in just a few minutes, or the Justice Department. But Kimmel answered all of this on Monday, said his comment has garnered so much criticism it was a joke. It was a joke about the fact that Trump is
censorship.
Almost 80 and she's younger. This is censorship.
Censorship.
This is silencing any voice of dissent and also being a thin-skinned little baby. We'll get to more of that after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
We hope that your morning is going well so far. Thank you so much for joining us on this Wednesday. It is 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. If you've been following this and you saw a picture that was posted on social media and then later deleted by James Comey of seashells featuring the numbers 8647, do you believe that constitutes a threat?
Wasn't this an eternity ago?
What's that?
Are we still talking about something that happened like over a year ago?
No, no. We're talking about something that happened yesterday. Related to something that happened over a year ago.
Okay.
855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Well, Jamie, if at first you don't succeed, try again. That is the motto of this administration, only when it comes to filing criminal charges against former adversaries.
Sure.
So you remember James Comey was indicted once before.
Yeah.
For his testimony in front of Congress. Well, that case completely fell apart. Because there was nothing there. And well, now they have decided they're going to try to indict him again. And in fact, have indicted him and have issued an arrest warrant for James Comey. You go, that name sounds familiar, Brian. Sure, he was the director of the FBI. Did he cost Hillary Clinton the election? We can argue that another day. But he was also a guy who would not completely pledge allegiance to Donald Trump, which made Donald Trump very angry. And Donald Trump does not forget. So a year ago, like Jamie said, he posted a picture on Twitter when he was walking on the beach. Now, it wasn't clear if he just saw this picture. I don't think he made the shells. It seemed as if he just came across this. Someone had arranged seashells in four numbers, 86, little space, 47.
Right.
Now, the FBI, who, according to Kash Patel, has been investigating this for a year and a half to try to get to the bottom
this
of it.
Is all this they is have the to pressing... do? This is all they have
well,
to
yeah.
do? Okay.
This
okay.
is important stuff, Jamie. There's seashells.
Sometimes
there's
I feel,
seashells.
Sometimes I feel like I warp into a new time span, so I have to make sure that I am currently with the whatever, April 29th, 2026. Okay, go...
Yes,
go ahead.
I understand your confusion, but I yes,
okay.
We must clear it up. That's all they have to do. This is a pressing matter. They're saying that this constituted a threat against Donald Trump's life, that 86 can be interpreted into kill. Now, James Comey said, well, I took it down because I didn't know that. And if you've ever worked in a restaurant, you know 86 just means we're out of it, dump it, ditch it. So when I first saw this picture, back when it first came out, I thought it meant dump Trump.
Yeah. I didn't think anything nefarious
right.
at all.
Well, Jamie, you know why?
We're reasonable human
beings.
Because
you're a rational
okay.
human being.
All right.
You have independent thought.
Okay.
You're not always looking to carry out a grudge. You're not a whiny little baby. You're a grown woman who can think for herself. So this is a 3-page indictment. Comey faces one charge of threats against the president and successors, one charge of transmitting a threat in interstate commerce.
Wow.
This could not be more transparent. Now, I saw Caitlin Collins, who you know is a great friend of the president from CNN. He despises Caitlin Collins.
She pushes hard.
She puts up with zero BS from them.
Mm-hmm.
She said this morning that her sources in the DOJ are saying that this is the weakest case that the DOJ has ever filed against anyone.
All of these cases of retribution have been thrown out in court.
Yes,
every single one
illegal.
Of them. Every single one of them, which is what this administration said Pam Bondi was essentially getting fired for, because mm-hmm. she was so weak on being able to prosecute these types of cases. You can't prosecute cases in front of a judge that have no merit. Juries
Correct.
Are not going to be able to find any evidence that there was any wrongdoing in these particular cases. This one is not going to be any different. I mean, it's just not. And all this is basically trying to get some sort of retribution. That's what this is. This, again, yes. going back to a conversation we were just having a few minutes ago about Jimmy Kimmel and ABC, this is another form of censorship. But this one is going to play out in the courts, and that's
not,
what
it's
this
never
is.
Going to get there.
No.
It's never going to get to court. And I saw a legal expert on talking yesterday, and the basis of this case, you have to prove that James Comey intended for this
right.
to be a threat, which he
that's
did not. And to
that's
Comey's
a Supreme
credit,
Court ruling. The
yes.
Supreme Court ruling says that there has to be true threat requires intent. That's what the Supreme Court has ruled. That is a ruling from this president's court because he thinks they're a personal court of his.
And yesterday, Comey put out video statements saying, listen, I took this down right when somebody said that it could possibly be interpreted that way. I took it down. This is not my intent. There's no chance this goes anywhere. And so, you know, we've got our new acting attorney general trying his best, taking his big swing, and he's going to whiff horribly.
Let's also be clear, our new acting attorney general was the president's personal attorney in several court cases leading up to the 2024 election. He is essentially the personal attorney of the president of the United States.
Which is what the Justice Department is supposed to be.
Right.
Right?
Yes. Yes, of course. That's what it's supposed to be. No, it's supposed to be completely independent. It's absolutely 100% independent.
Not anymore.
And I had a friend ask me yesterday, because Jeanine Pirro keeps getting these cases thrown at her. And I had a good friend ask me the other day, if she keeps losing, will she end up going back to Fox pretty soon?
Mm-hmm.
I
don't know if Fox will have her. Roger makes a good point. And I saw this image yesterday as a reminder. A few years ago, Donald Trump posted a photo of a truck flying a bunch of Trump flags with a bound and gag Joe Biden in the back with the header 8646. As Joe Biden was president at the time, using the same logic that the DOJ is using, couldn't Trump be arrested or indicted for the same kind of crime? Very good. Very good. And then Don says, he's listening on WMDX, electing really old Republicans is dumb. Perhaps. We are going to talk about guns and bullets and small town law.
Local news, community stories, and the conversations that matter most. Now, more Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:35 right now. We hope that you are having a great start to your Wednesday morning. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. All right, listen to this. A California-based gun dealer, a small-town police chief, and a scam to import illegal armor-piercing ammunition. Now, that does sound like all the ingredients for a low-budget movie. All those components, though, came together in Wadsworth County. Now, the gun dealer has agreed to plead guilty to federal charges. John Diedrich is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, whose work has revealed injustices and wrongdoing. Recently, he published a fascinating project, Behind the Gun, which is ongoing, that reframed the issue of firearm injuries and deaths, focusing on gun owners. He's been covering this story, and he joins us now. John, good to have you, and always a pleasure to talk to you. I don't know where to start, so I'm going to let you just give us the background on this story, because it is wild.
It is a wild story. So, yeah, thanks for the intro. Good to be with you, Brian, Jamie. The backstory here is this criminal. I cover federal court from time to time, get in there. I used to cover it more, and it's been drawing me back lately for cases just like this. The basic scenario is laid out by federal prosecutors is that these two brothers, Darren and Jacob Dowd, who are from California, from the Sacramento area, are gun dealers. You know, they have a federal firearms licensee, and they were working with somebody, basically a scam, to work with a local police chief in the town of Lynn, which is a small town in Walworth County, and it's not a big town, but what they did is law enforcement can request certain armaments, certain ammunition, things like that, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms will give exceptions for local law enforcement. And so what these brothers were doing was working with this police chief to say, hey, can you put in and say your town needs like a lot of armor-piercing rounds, which, you know, it's a small department and just a few cops, and I mean like a half a million rounds, and it was absurd. ATF sniffed it out, you know, and I mean it was sort of Captain Obvious, but I mean credit on them that they didn't just sort of rubber stamp it and it went through. So the deal didn't go through. There was like a middleman. I think, you know, the police chief's college roommate was kind of the go-between to the gun dealers. It's a stuff of movies, really.
I mean, for our listeners, right, you mentioned the hundreds of thousands, even millions of rounds of armor-piercing ammunition. But for anybody who doesn't understand the inner workings of our local small police departments especially, explain to us just how unusual this actually was that ATF would have sniffed this out immediately.
Yeah, I mean, so again, when you're looking at, you know, at how many rounds, you know, first of all, the kind of, you know, the kind of ammunition is just not needed that often. And when you don't have that many, you know, officers, you're just not going to need that many rounds. The, you know, these rounds are really, you know, they're expensive because they're hard to get. The thing is, what's interesting here is that they're not illegal, you know, to possess, but you have to be able to import them. And these were coming from Bosnia and Herzegovina. That's where the importer, the ammunition maker was located. So in order to bring that in, you need that, you know, the special exception under ATF rules. And so, again, that's carved out for law enforcement. But, I mean, even for a department like, you know, Madison or Milwaukee, I mean, that's a lot of rounds, and it's specialty rounds. So those wouldn't be rounds that regular cops wouldn't necessarily be using all the time. This would be more like the tactical or SWAT team, you know, things of that nature that they would need these specialized rounds. Certainly not a small department, you know, of just a few cops.
John Diedrich is our guest. He's an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can read all of John's work at jsonline.com. All right, Lynn is a small town in Warwick County. We've got two arms dealers from California. How do these groups get together? Where, you know, because it seems like there should be other small departments somewhere between Sacramento and Lynn that they could have talked to.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's these, you know, having covered courts and these kind of things for a while, it's always like, you know, who you know, and geography might be less important as the connection that you have. And so there's an unnamed source who acted as the go-between. An individual who's not charged, and, you know, usually when somebody's just got their initials in there, and they might be, you know, cooperating and that's maybe where, you know, when they investigated this, that's what they focused on. But that individual has a connection, between the police chief, Chief Bushy, and the gun dealers, the Dowds in California. And so how does that happen? That's not really spelled out in court documents exactly how they met each other, other than the police chief, who's no longer the police chief in Lynn, and I should be really clear, is not charged with anything right now. He does have a lawyer. Yeah. He's refused comment. But the brothers have both pled guilty and are coming into just in the Eastern District of Wisconsin and are moving through the process in federal court in Milwaukee. But the chief hasn't been charged, nor has anybody else been charged. We don't know, you know, ultimately would they be or not, but that's the connection. Is somebody knew the chief, somebody knew, and again, there's not, you know, suffice to say, I haven't seen this kind of arrangement happen, at least show up in federal court that often. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like any department or any chief would do this. And sure. I think, what was interesting though, is Chief Bushy in the town of Lynn, you know, meeting, you know, I talked to the chairman of the town of Lynn, and he was describing how the police chief, you know, came in, and, you know, he was asking, he was like laying out this, you know, arrangement. They didn't really understand what was going on, because the kickback here, right, the money that was provided by the brothers was ostensibly to be used for police equipment. So like a new squad car, things of that nature, not necessarily, I haven't seen in court documents indications that the chief himself was enriched, but more was helping his department. So for the town of Lynn, it's like, oh, okay, I don't really understand that, but that sounds like he didn't really lay out what was happening, but that was the play.
So, and did he in fact use the money for that equipment?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was all in process, and then the feds came in and put a they didn't bring in the ammunition in the end, but that was the deal that, you know, he had told the chief, that, you know, the board, that's, I'm going to balance my budget and get more things that I, you know, that you guys can't afford to give me. So, but the whole process didn't play out because the ammunition never made it in the country because the ATF shut it down.
Were the brothers trying to, was this a resale scheme by the brothers? Was this stockpiling? What is the investigation showing?
It's a sales thing. Okay. I mean, they have a gun store in, you know, in Sacramento, and they were selling these. And, these rounds, depending, it'd be, a few bucks to $5 a round. I mean, depending on the scarcity of ammunition, we just went through the pandemic where ammunition was really scarce, and this would even be more scarce. So, the market would do, but no, it looks like, financially, these guys were, looking to make a buck. That was their business. I mean, there's also indications in there about them doing other things like impersonating the ATF, which there's a photo in the criminal complaint of Jacob Dowd in ATF garb. And they actually would like pretend this, according to the search warrants and plea, to be ATF agents and like go and take people's guns and claim that they were seizing them on behalf of the government and, things of this nature. So no doubt that caught the attention of ATF, who was investigating them. They're not charged with that right now, but, kind of putting a thumb in the, in the eye, so to speak.
So John Diedrich is with us. He's an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. JSOnline.com is where you can read everything. And I want to get into behind the gun a little bit. But before we do that, you kind of mentioned it a little, but is there any indication that anybody else, the sheriff especially, who is not charged now with any crimes, are you hearing any rumblings that this case is not completely over?
Well, I mean, this took... Yes, I think it's safe to say this took like 6 months for Jacob to come into court with a plea, and Darren, the other brother, pled out a while ago. So this is kind of, and that happens in federal court. Things move in slow motion, but it also turns out sometimes that more information is developed, new sources, and so forth. I don't think the book is closing it. The prosecutors are mum, as they always, they just usually are pretty careful about this. They can't, by DOJ rules, talk about some of these things. But I don't know that the chief is totally in the clear yet. And so I would say that, stay tuned on this. I don't have an indication. I'm not trying to be cheeky about saying he is. I know that he's going to be charged or not. I really don't. It's just how long this has played out. I think it bears watching to see what comes next.
My goodness. And Brian had mentioned Behind the Gun, and this is a project you've been working on for quite a few years. So first of all, before we get into what you found, explain to us what this project is, John.
Yeah, so I did this through, I work at Journal Sentinel, and then I went and did a fellowship at Marquette University at the O'Brien Fellowship for Public Service Journalism. And what we wanted to do was look at gun deaths and gun injuries in a different way. I've covered this issue for, more than 20 years at the Journal Sentinel, but it just felt like a lot of the lines were sort of like on repeat, and distressingly and depressingly, on repeat, that, the narratives are well known. But what I did was I looked at it from, as Brian, as you alluded to at the beginning, from a perspective of the gun owners. Tell me something different. And what I found, first of all, I looked at statistics statewide and looked at gun deaths, including suicides, because it's important to note, and people might not know this, but 7 of 10 gun deaths in Wisconsin are suicides. And, that isn't always talked about. It isn't included in, when we use that phrase gun violence, so suicide may not be commonly understood to be in there. But when you include suicide and you adjust for population, the map looks a lot different in Wisconsin. I mean, Milwaukee is still very high for gun deaths, but there's smaller counties like Wood County and other counties up north that are small that have a different gun deaths look differently there. So, and gun owners, as I leaned into this, have some really interesting, solutions, and they care very much about the issue. And I just think it turns out that, people who are maybe more on the sort of gun control side have not, and gun rights side, they haven't really come together as much. And I we're actually seeing more of that now. I'm more hopeful about this issue than I was before I started the project.
Well, it's a really enlightening project, and I urge people on both sides of the gun issue to go check out John's series Behind the Gun at jsonline.com. But you also, you didn't just write these and then hope that people would read them. You've been having a lot of live events behind the different sections. I remember talking to you about the one about suicides, and now you just had one in March as well, correct? Do you have one coming up?
That's right. Well, we had one in Wausau. That's been 2 years now. It's wild mm-hmm. to spend that long. But we called that one at the intersection of mental health and firearms. Up in that part of the state in Wausau, there's, you know, that is more of a suicide issue. So we talked about separation of lethal means in times of distress, what that looks like, who you could turn to, the gun shop project where you can bring firearms, no questions asked, to a gun store and have them safe, keep them for a while, those kind of things. And then in March, we had an event, again, a first of its kind, called the Milwaukee Gun Owner Safety Summit. We had it at Prince Hall at 12th and North in Milwaukee. And we brought people together there to say, hey, can we have a different dialogue? You know, often when things happen around firearms and firearms deaths, especially in Milwaukee, the line will be, you know, that you often will hear is, let's put the guns down. Can we put the guns down? Which is a fine
message.
Well,
John,
but as we talk
unfortunately
to people,
John, we're out of time, but I gotta I want to tell everybody again, go read it, Behind the Gun, and John's latest work on jsonline.com. John Diedrich, always a pleasure to talk to you. Look forward to having you again, John.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Wisconsin Wakes Up Here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:52 right now. That is the weirdest version of this song I've ever heard in my life, but, you know.
Let's groove tonight. Man, I'm flashing back to my bouncer days. This is
fantastic.
I got my back to the wall. I'm watching the dance floor, and I'm just kind of swaying. Hello,
it's,
ladies.
It's
how
a
you
great
doing?
Song, though, for what we're about to talk to end the show today.
If I came to you, Jamie and Parker and Frank, and I said, hey, I got a great idea for a show outing. Yeah. We're going to go have a couple drinks. You would say, oh, that sounds good. And I would say, and we're going to kink and draw.
Ooh.
We're gonna
and
what?
You would say, well, what?
Excuse me?
Squeeze me?
No, don't do that.
This is, Jamie pointed this out, so I'm going to let you tell. I don't know where you get some of your stories, I read this and it was, woo, hello.
It is something. So kink and draw is actually a session that's being held at bars across the country. The event is part of a practice, especially right now around the D.C. area, where people shell out a few bucks to draw live naked models at a bar. No commitment, no experience necessary. It's just cash.
For who, the artist or the model?
Everybody, I guess.
And who's committing?
I don't know.
I love you, model.
But it's casual and community-oriented. Okay. No different, really. They promote this as, you know, these artists attending pub trivia night. No. This is much different than pub trivia night.
I think it's more interesting.
It's a little different. Yeah.
Now,
I don't know why you guys are being such prudes. They paint pottery at some bars for
true.
Pottery nights.
As Jamie said,
trivia.
They do.
There's karaoke. There's naked people on a table while I sketch, allegedly.
It's just different.
I didn't even bring a pencil. I'm just using my finger to draw on paper.
Oh. So King, the founder of Kink and Draw, which I just love the name, says that it's a space for creativity, self-expression, and appreciation of the human form in a way that's respectful, open, and completely judgment-free.
Hello.
Now, she has actually, at this point, led 43 different people situated into three groups that face each other with different models through these warm-up exercises. And for about 2 minutes, you keep your pencil just moving on a page. And then in the very first round, you draw only with your non-dominant hand. So you draw
with your dominant hand.
Well, we don't want to know. We don't ask questions at Kink and Draw.
I do.
So you draw the negative space and what's everything around the model. And then between each instruction, the models are moved into a new pose. So sometimes they'll slink into the split. Sometimes they'll put their legs up over their heads in time with lo-fi beats to the live DJ.
Parker, do you have any lo-fi beats on tap that we could
send to
you? I can find some lo-fi beats.
Maybe a lo-fi beat.
So bar owners are saying that these new drawing nights are obviously good for business, especially this is a pretty critical time. In all seriousness, it's a pretty critical time, especially in Washington, D.C., for the restaurant industry because of the amount of troops.
I could just imagine some bars in the North Woods doing this on a Thursday. The model's probably different, but it would be very exciting.
During snowmobiling season.
During snowmobiling season or
hunting.
Deer Widow's weekend. Get it? Wow.
This is something. But
it may make me try to become an artist. I've always been horrible at drawing, except for a few things I could always draw that looked realistic.
Now, so far, a lot of the people who have attended these events across the country, again, mostly in D.C., have been younger. Most of them younger than 40. And they describe themselves as hobby artists. That's what they said. And, you know, they're fast paced.
That's what I tell my wife when I go, listen, honey, I'm a hobby artist.
I'm going to Kink and Draw tonight.
I'm going to Kink and Draw. I have to express my art. I must draw.
Up at Uncle.
You can stay home and draw me or the dogs.
No.
I'm not that much into that.
No, hobby. I'm going to Uncle Buck's over in the Northwoods up there for a beer and for snowmobiling.
Stella got off her sled.
For Kink and Draw.
Stripped down out of her coveralls, and I'm going to draw her in her drawers.
This is a thing happening.
I can't wait. Listen, we'll do it. I'm going to put this out there, Jamie.
Don't talk to the suits about it later.
We'll do a live broadcast.
We will, from a Kink and Draw.
If your bar or restaurant is doing a Kink and Draw, and
Parker
will model. Oh, yes, Parker will model.
As long as we don't live stream the video.
No, there'll just be still photos. Artistic stills.
If we stream it, then that becomes a whole different level of streaming at Civic Media. So
we will use a Zoom lens to not embarrass you. Wink, wink. You know what I'm talking about.
As long as it's warm in there.
Yeah, you got to be careful where you put the model, right by the door in the winter. Or, you know.
That's why it wouldn't work at Uncle Buck's in the Northwoods during snowmobiling season.
No, you got to put one of those extra doors on there, a little foyer, so that people come in. Because once that Arctic air blows in, unless Stella is still modeling, it doesn't matter.
Can you imagine walking down Main Street, seeing Uncle Buck's, and you look in the window and just...
Oh. There's a Kink and Draw happening.
There's a Kink and Draw going on.
Somebody's
on the table.
That's just chill. To the low beats and grooving.
Would you like some low beats?
I would like some lo-fi beats.
I've got some lo-fi beats for you.
Oh, there we go. Oh, right, very go. Nice. Yeah. Very nice.
Now,
it's putting us
still.
Into the Kink and Draw mood.
It's time for Kink
can
and
you,
Draw.
Can you move your head just a little bit to the left? Not that way.
Would Bob,
all right, perfect.
Would Bob Ross approve of this? That's
little
my
birds.
Question.
Well, they're happy, all right.
They're happy little birds flying out of happy little trees and bushes.
Oh, wow.
And just enjoying themselves. I do abstract naked art. I never draw the head because I'm not good at faces.
Oh, PBS would not approve of this, of the lo-fi beats and Bob Ross.
All right,
Kink and Draw people. It's a new thing.
Somebody could sponsor. Some Kink and Draw could sponsor the program. We're always looking to
expand our horizons.
With new friends, let's say.
Expand the horizons.
Yes. All right. Well, listen. This has been soothing and erotic at the same time. We hope we send you off into your day with a new appreciation of the arts. That's our goal.
Right.
We want you to appreciate the arts here on the Civic Media Network. I'm done.
We're done. On that note,
thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of the program. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Marks.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.